Thanks to Sabna Modgil and John Hamid from Phonesia for letting me interview Dr. Ravi Batra and helping me spread this word. My name is Apikshit Mule, and it's my honor today to interview Dr. Ravi Batra and help ordinary Americans understand the problems with our economy today. Dr. Ravi Batra is an esteemed professor of economics at the Southern Methodist University. Then he has been an author of the New York Number Time bestseller for 52 weeks. He also had authored several other books, including The Downfall of Capitalism and Communism, Can Capitalism Be Saved?, Greenspan's Fraud, How Two Decades of His Policies Have Undermined the Global Economy, and his latest book in Jan 2007, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. He considers the last book to be a summary of his old version books and a few updates and fixes to the problems in the economy. Dr. Batra has made a career out of making controversial forecasts, and among his notable successes in this forecast in the late 1970s, where the Ayatollahs would take over Iran in 1979 and rule for a while, the Soviet communism would vanish by the end of the century, and United States would be entangled in a major fight with fundamentalist Islam starting around 2000. For more predictions, please go to www.ravibatra.com, RAVIBATRA.com. Dr. Batra, thank you for your time, for coming to the studio and doing this community service. Let me get down directly to the questions. I heard about the Alan Greenspan was a Federal Reserve Chairman when you published the book, The Greenspan's Fraud. A Federal Reserve Chairman is the biggest banker of the country. How difficult was it for you as an mainstream economist and a professor from a privately funded university like SMU to publish this book and explain this fraud?
Well, see, Greenspan was not just the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He was the most famous chairman ever. People regarded him as God, almighty God of money. So much so that he was even knighted by Queen Elizabeth. British citizen, no American citizen is normally given that honor, but Greenspan was. And here I felt that he was doing things which were going to bring tremendous pain to the global economy in just a year or two. And so I thought that I should do something to expose his policies and expose his way of thinking. So I wrote this book, Greenspan's Fraud, and sent it to about 10, 15 different publishers. They all turned me down. And it's not that this was my first book. And they said, well, we know that you have written lots of books before, but who is going to write against Greenspan? So finally, Macmillan from New York accepted the book, but they said, we don't like this title. This title is too much. And I said, at least read the book and then see if he has really committed fraud or not. They said, well, we would send the book to an outside law firm.
Interesting.
So they sent it to an attorney, a law firm, and asked them to give their honest opinion. And the law firm took longer than I had taken time to write it. They took a long time, and after 3-4 months, they called me. He said, Dr. Batra, congratulations, we are going to accept your title.
Okay, very good.
And that's how it all got published eventually.
Excellent. So what did they have to say about the fraud, the word?
Well, the word fraud was there because in 1981, Greenspan was the President Reagan's advisor. And at that time, the country had a tremendous budget deficit. And Reagan had just cut the income tax sharply. And as a result, the budget deficit had ballooned. But now there was a tremendous deficit, and they didn't know how to run the government because China was not there to lend them the money. So now they had to raise some other taxes. So Greenspan came up with the idea that let's raise the tax on Social Security and payroll tax, and this will help us save money for the retirement fund, and we would honor our commitments for the rest to Social Security retirees in the future. But all they wanted to collect this money to pay for the deficit, the government deficit. And that's what they did after the tax legislation was passed. So I call it fraud.
Right.
And this was fraud. And many other people who read my book said, yeah, this is fraud.
Right. Very good. Dr. Batra, in your book, The New Golden Age and Common Sense Macroeconomics, you explained some fundamentals of economics of supply and demand, you know, and how the huge disparities that are happening today in America, you know, how you consider that will undermine and that might lead to a depression. Could you explain in common man terms this supply and demand, how it works and how wages and productivity have to do with those?
Well, for a healthy economy, supply has to be equal to demand. Mm-hmm. If there is too much, people are laid off, mm-hmm. or there's a lot of unemployment when there is not enough demand for goods produced.
Right.
Because if there is overproduction, mm-hmm. then businesses have to lay off some people.
Right.
Like if General Motors is producing 10 million cars and there is demand only for 8 million, then those who are making 2 million extra cars will have to be laid off. And right. that's what happened in the past 2-3 years. So supply and demand have to be equal to have a healthy economy. Now the main source of supply is productivity.
Right.
When a person becomes more productive, he or she produces more, so mm-hmm. supply goes up. Mm-hmm. The main source of demand are wages. People spend money out of their earnings, right. not out of other things.
Right.
Now, it so happens that productivity rises year after year because of new technology.
Mm-hmm.
So supply rises year after year.
Right.
Now, if you want a healthy economy, then wages have to rise year after year also. Precisely. And in the same proportion.
Precisely.
So that demand keeps up with supply.
Very good, yeah.
But for the past 30 years, the government policy has been to make sure that wages don't grow.
Mm-hmm.
They follow monetary policy. I'll tell you what monetary policy does. So their policy has been that wages don't grow. Especially the Republicans, they didn't even want the real minimum wage to rise. Then they have free trade, outsourcing, all these things.
Right.
Don't let wages to grow. So what happened was that supply rose much faster than demand.
Right.
Now, the moment supply exceeds demand, there will be layoffs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how come they prevented these layoffs mm-hmm. even after Reagan took over? Because it's after Reagan that the wages started to stopped rising and supply went up fast.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they prevent this unemployment for so many years? Well, there is another way in which you can raise demand to the level of supply, and that is through the creation of debt.
Right.
Because if you make people borrow money,
mm-hmm.
if you incite them or induce them or lure them into borrowing money,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then they would spend money out of their borrowing rather than their pay raise.
Exactly, right.
Whereas in the past, before 1980, wages were rising as fast as productivity. They didn't need to borrow that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now what do you do to make people borrow money? Well, you bring the interest rate down.
Right.
So that lures people into borrowing.
Right, precisely.
And you also encourage people to borrow money.
Right.
So this is how we find there is so much consumer debt today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's so much consumer debt. Now, since supply was rising so fast and wages were not, they found that even all their consumer borrowing was not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Even the government had to spend more money
mm-hmm.
to create more demand. So this way, the government budget deficit also began to rise and rise and rise. This all happened after Reagan, you may
mm-hmm,
recall.
Mm-hmm.
Until Reagan, the country had a debt which was less than $1 trillion.
Oh, is it?
Uh-huh. Imagine that. 39 presidents before him collected a total debt of less than $1 trillion.
Uh-huh.
And now we have 14, 15 trillion in just a matter of 30 years.
Right.
So this was their way. Don't allow wages to rise, but create more and more debt, consumer debt, as well as government debt. This way, demand was raised to the level of supply.
Right, right.
Now, when this happens, in fact, 2 days ago, I wrote an article showing a very simple equation. It will be published in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
It showed that if the deficit rises by $1 trillion, the government deficit rises by $1 trillion, businessman's income goes up by $1 trillion.
Uh-huh.
If it rises by $2 trillion, businessman's income goes up by $2
trillion. Huh, interesting. Uh-huh.
So now, since 1980, they've had $14 trillion of extra debt, government debt.
Uh-huh.
So businessmen's incomes have gone up by trillions of dollars. And that's why we find there is incredible concentration of wealth and inequality now.
Oh, the 1% of America owns more than
95% of wealth.
Yeah, right.
Now, but this process will crash someday. This uh-huh. process has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Profits keep rising because of excessive consumer debt and government debt. Profits keep rising, but there comes a time when the banks stop lending to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Because there comes a time when the consumer has run out of good collateral.
Right.
They don't have good collateral anymore, so now the bank says, hey, how come you don't have something, you have mortgaged your house, you have mortgaged your cars and everything, there is no more good collateral, I can't lend you anymore.
Mortgage your life.
I can't lend you money anymore. They stop lending, and the moment that happens, there is immediately overproduction.
Right.
And overproduction means profits crash,
mm-hmm.
and when profits crash, the stock market crashes right away. And that's what I wrote in 2005 when I wrote this book, Greenspan's Fraud. And I said, you know, he's committing fraud, and he's creating more and more debt in the economy,
right.
and postponing the problems mm-hmm. to the future.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon we will have consumers will not be able to borrow anymore, and then there would be crash. But nobody paid attention to that warning.
Right.
Although people read the book, and there was some lot of interest in the book at that time. Then in 2007, I wrote this book, The New Golden Age, making specific predictions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, let people, I should tell them what's going to happen.
Right.
I wrote that by 2009, we would have a very serious recession. And even though but the oil prices will keep shooting up.
Right, that we're seeing it today. Yeah.
That's what I wrote. And I said housing meltdown would occur,
mm-hmm.
and there will be tremendous unemployment, all because, and the people would blame it on the housing meltdown and the banking crisis, but that won't be is not the right reason.
Right.
The right reason is the rising gap between wages and productivity.
Yeah, just for all listeners, we have already, nationally, we have hit a double dip in housing prices. I read it yesterday on CNBC. So we already, in one of the predictions that yesterday is coming true. So also, I want to ask you a question. Mr. Ben Bernanke is proposing now another round of quantitative easing. You know, his stimulus does not seem to be working. We still have 8% unemployment in this nation. You know, what's going on? Means why is the stimulus not working?
Well, today is the first Friday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And... on the first Friday, the Labor Department report comes out mm-hmm. every Friday, first Friday of the month.
Right.
And today the report was that the unemployment rate is 9%. But that's an understatement, because that does not count about 8 million Americans who are so discouraged.
That they're not looking for a job.
They're not looking for a job. Right. And if you don't look for a job, you are not counted as unemployed. Actual percentage is about 16 to 17% of uh-huh. people are actually unemployed.
Right.
And all this budget deficit, extra printing of money, all this goes into the pockets of the wealthy.
Right.
It does not help the economy at all. It may help somewhat indirectly because it raises the stock market and then people feel a little happy about it. So they may spend a little more, but it doesn't really do much to the economy.
So what percentage of American economy is consumer? How much is the banks? You know, do you have any idea of, could you tell our listeners about it? Then why consumers' income has to be raised? You know, what is the percentage? How much percentage of the economy contributes to consumers' spending? How much contributes from the bank's investment?
70% of the economy is consumer spending.
Uh-huh, right.
And and another 10% is from consumers buying homes.
Uh-huh.
So you can see 70 plus 10 is really families spending.
Right.
The rest of the 20% comes from investment.
Uh-huh.
And the question is, why would businesses be investing a lot
right.
when they already have so much to produce.
Right.
The factories are sitting idle.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So why would they expand their business further?
Mm-hmm.
They may expand it a little bit,
right,
but not that much more.
Uh-huh.
So investment is not rising, whereas families are not spending money on new homes. They're not buying and not so much on their other goods also. And so we are not paying attention to the needs of the consumer.
Right, right.
We're only paying attention to the needs of the already so rich corporations and individuals,
mm-hmm,
and they cannot really help this economy.
Right. So then why is the stock market rising? You know, we have this all bad news, 23 million unemployed and many more, maybe unofficially. But we see the stock market is still rising. What's behind
that? That's the reason. The rising budget deficit,
uh-huh,
goes directly into the pockets of the corporations in, uh-huh, terms of their executive bonuses and high profits,
uh-huh,
very high profits.
Okay.
The economy is bad, but profits are skyrocketing even now.
Uh-huh.
That's why the stock market is rising. Uh-huh. But the market will crash also the moment the deficit starts to go down. See, now there is a talk of from the Tea Party especially. They want to bring this deficit down sharply.
Right, right.
If they succeed, then once the deficit starts to go down, within about 5 to 6 months, there would be a horrendous stock market crash. I remember the year 1999. At that time also, the stock market was extremely high. If you recall, it was called the dot-com
right.
bubble.
Yeah, you predicted the 2001 crash in your books.
Yeah, I predicted that one. How did I do that? I at that time, President, who was the president? Clinton was the president.
Yeah, right.
And there was a budget surplus, uh-huh, in the economy,
uh-huh,
for a rare budget surplus.
Yeah.
Now, Congress wanted to cut taxes further.
Uh-huh.
Greenspan opposed that move.
Uh-huh.
And I said to myself, this guy just doesn't know economics.
Uh-huh.
Because the moment there is budget surplus, then then demand will be less than supply.
Right.
Profits will start crashing.
Uh-huh.
And market would crash.
Uh-huh.
And so I wrote a book in 1999, The Crash of the Millennium,
uh-huh,
saying that next year in 2000, there would be a horrendous stock market crash. And the reason is this budget surplus.
Uh-huh.
And that's what happened.
Oh, right.
The stock market crashed in the year 2000. It crashed so badly that Greenspan printed a lot of money. He was still the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Budget deficit went up sharply. They printed a lot of money. And this is how they created the housing bubble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, then the housing bubble crashed in 2007 and 2008. And then we have a much worse recession than before. So you can only postpone these things.
Right.
And they come back with much greater force. And now they're doing the same thing, postponing these things through another rise, big rise in the stock market.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as this budget deficit starts to go down, I would give it at most another 6 months, and then the market would crash again.
So the $14 trillion debt ceiling that we are hitting right now, they are going to take a decision, you know, and Paul Ryan has come up with a plan which sounds to me similar like what Ronald Reagan did in the 1970s. So, you know, what do you think about this? You know, hit this federal debt limit, you know, we are reaching this decision, and if the government, we still see the politics, there's a status quo, you know. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think it's, where are we heading right now?
Well, most likely they would miss the deadline. The deadline is supposed to be May 15th.
Mm-hmm.
But they can extend it for another month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides know that, Democrats and Republicans, they know that the deadline can be extended,
uh-huh,
although it will slow down the borrowing,
right,
but it won't be catastrophic.
Oh, okay.
So there will be a lot of politics here and there. But in the end, I think there would be some extension of the debt ceiling if there is a sharp cut in the budget deficit.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, the Republicans, especially the Tea Party Republicans, are not going to approve of the ceiling. So I have a feeling that there would be a strong cut in the budget deficit. And remember, the moment that happens, demand will be short of supply, profits will start to fall, and the market would then crash.
Oh, okay.
Well, I would give it about 6 months, because these things would take some time.
If my understanding of federal debt ceiling in the common man's language, please let me know if I'm wrong. federal debt ceiling limit, like, is, for example, I have a credit card and I have maxed out my credit card. Now I'm requesting my bank, okay, increase my credit limit.
Right.
When I know that I don't have the money in my bank to pay already the maxed out credit card. Is that right?
Well, that's true. But in this case, Uncle Sam thinks that they can borrow money from China and Japan.
Right.
And all that money, all that they borrow actually goes into the pockets of executives.
Right.
But they fool the public. We're doing something to preserve jobs.
Uh-huh.
It's not. It may be preserving jobs, but at lower wages,
uh-huh.
and the rich are getting rich, so rich. I mean, even under President Obama, the rich are getting richer faster than ever before.
Yeah, today I read on CNBC the wages of the CEOs have higher than the pre-recession level. You know, this is something I found.
That's right. The wages are going. Their wages are going faster, up faster. So this is just again the same old wine, or the new wine in the old bottle or some, same one. It's the same policy,
uh-huh.
and it's only going to postpone it for a few more months. But then, if the budget deficit starts to fall, then I would start preparing for myself and gradually get out of the stock market.
But Dr. Batra, if we approve the budget deficit, the debt limit to be increased, for example, you know, if there is nothing and okay, they're like, okay, we'll borrow more. Do you think the world is going to lose confidence in American dollar as such? Because of if we exceed 14 trillion, okay, will Congress, no problem, let's exceed that limit of 14 trillion, let's make it 17 trillion, say.
Well, see, it doesn't matter how much the debt ceiling is.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling they would not give them excessive rise in the ceiling.
Right.
But even if they do, it doesn't matter. What matters is how much the government is authorized to borrow, and that depends on the budget deficit.
Uh-huh.
The budget deficit is $1.2 trillion for this year. Suppose they cut it by $300-400 billion for 1 year.
Right.
That's a $400 billion fall in mm-hmm. the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
That will immediately kill the economy.
Oh, is it? Uh-huh. Okay.
By immediately, I mean it's within 6 months.
Right. So now coming back to your insightful predictions, your foresight that you have. I read the book in 1978 published, The Downfall of Capitalism and Communism, where capitalism can be said, where you said that monopoly capitalism is coming to an end. How did you make such, you know, and so many predictions all over the world you have made, so many things have come true, fall of the communism in Russia. I'm just impressed with your opinion. And it opened my eyes in the year 2008, 30 years after you published the book. So I just want to know, you know, could you tell our listeners, how did you make these predictions, you know?
Well, actually, I just gave you the theory of supply and demand.
Right.
It's purely logic.
Uh-huh.
But people think that I'm an astrologer.
Uh-huh.
All I'm doing is applying supply-demand logic to various things. Similarly, for the Soviet Union, for instance, I had written that by the end of the century, Soviet communism would be gone.
Right.
But the Chinese variety would be
uh-huh.
flourishing.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yes. In fact, in my new book, The New Golden Age, I mentioned that China has entered a golden age of it itself.
Yes.
And then we are also going to see one
uh-huh.
once there is the fall of monopoly capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this monopoly capitalism, I think, is going to fall by 2015 or 2016.
Uh-huh.
Because if you look at, there are patterns of history.
Uh-huh.
Something called there are 7 year cycles, for instance. I wrote about Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote that it started in 2003. Most likely, it would end in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
They would start withdrawing troops
mm-hmm.
because there is a seven and a half year cycle for major events.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening about.
Yep.
Iraq. They're getting out now. So, about monopoly capitalism, I wrote that there would be a very strong, very bad recession by 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And give another 7 years, by 2016, this system is going to end.
Oh, okay.
So by applying these patterns of history to various events,
mm-hmm.
I've been able to foresee them with some degree of accuracy.
Excellent. Very fantastic. I think it's very It's very rare that such economists have used this kind of technique. That is, so you are really innovative. So on similar lines, you know, in CNBC, all people call this Mark Faber, Dr. Doom, you know, and everyone say, okay, we have been to boom, gloom, and now it's time for doom. But when I read your books, you are not the Dr. Doom. Of course, you are the first to predict the fall of monopoly capitalism in 1978. But you also have a solution to the problem. So I'll call you Dr. Solution. So tell us, the listeners, you know, we want to let our Americans know what is the solution. What means we want a long-term solution so that we can have shared prosperity, growth for all Americans.
Well, if you see the latest book, it's not, the title itself is The New Golden Age.
New Golden Age, yes.
So it's full of optimism.
Right.
There is no doomsaying at all.
And there also you say about economic chaos. So please also explain that, you know.
Well, because I felt that there's going to be a backlash against political corruption and the coming chaos. That's why the subtitle is, what's the subtitle?
The coming revolution against political corruption and
economic chaos.
Yeah.
So I felt that by 2009 there will be a very serious recession, and then the public would find out how the government, especially the Republican governments, have been cheating them. Their supply side economics, so-called supply side economics, is not working at all. See, they cut taxes for wealthy corporations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So and their logic is this: if they have more money, they would create jobs.
Right.
Now, let me ask you. You are not able to sell what you're producing now.
Uh-huh.
And I can give you a lot of big tax cut. Why would you expand your business? You can't even sell what you are producing now.
Right.
The government is going to ask its money back, even if it's giving you free in terms of loan.
Right.
They're not going to, like suppose General Motors, they ask GM, produce another, hire another million people and produce 2 million more cars.
Uh-huh.
Now the GM would say, well, government is not going to take my cars back if I can't sell them.
Right.
I still have to give the money back, even if they give me free of interest.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, you can cut the tax rate for the corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't sell what you're producing now, there is no reason why you would expand your business.
Oh, okay. Very good. Right.
So cutting tax rates for corporations is silly. In it's just a joke.
Uh-huh.
In fact, let me give you some historical example. And supply-side economists hate history.
Oh, okay.
They hate facts.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I tell you why.
Okay.
In fact, I was doing this kind of radio show elsewhere, and this supply-sider comes to say, just cut the tax rate for wealthy individuals and corporations, and they will have more money. They will then hire more people.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, do you know what the growth rate was in the 1950s and the 1960s?
Uh-huh.
He said, I know. It was very decade of very high growth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I said 4.5%.
Uh-huh.
And I said, do you know what the growth rate has been after Reagan applied his income tax cuts?
Right.
I said, no. I said, well, it has been less than 3%.
Right.
He said, well, you sound right. It has been about less than 3%.
And we also sent the man on the moon when the taxes were high, really.
Well, let me come to that. I said, in the 1950s and the 1960s, growth was much higher. Everybody's wages were rising.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't have much debt. The government didn't have much debt.
Right.
And so we had a very sound economy. So I asked this guy, now, do you know what the top bracket income tax rate was?
What was it?
He said, no, I don't know. I said, well, that's why you're such a fan of supply-side economics.
Ah.
I said, the top bracket income tax rate in the 1950s was 92%.
That's awesome.
He said, what? What did you say, 92%? I said, yeah, it was 92%. And I said, it was under President Eisenhower, who was a Republican.
Oh, okay.
But this was the tax rate, and growth was so high. You know, his tunes suddenly changed. Well, that's not fair. I said, you didn't talk about fairness.
Okay.
You were talking about prosperity.
Right.
And right. He would not call me on the radio show again.
Okay.
But then before he let me go, he said, well, Kennedy reduced the income tax rate. And in the Kennedy era, growth was 4.5%.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're right. Let's take the Kennedy income tax.
Mm-hmm.
He cut it down from 92% to 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. Let's raise it to 80%.
Okay.
He said, He said, no, it's totally unfair. I said, well, talk about fairness then. Right. Let's talk about all these wealthy guys, rich guys getting so much money and the poor suffering.
Right.
So the solution is eliminate the budget deficit by going back to the tax structure of the 1950s and the 1960s.
Okay.
When we had very high growth, mm-hmm. why was growth so high with such high income taxes? When income tax was very high on corporations and the wealthy individuals, mm-hmm. taxes on the poor and the middle class were very low.
Right.
Because you're collecting high revenue from one side, mm-hmm. you can afford to keep low taxes on the other.
Right.
Like Social Security tax was only 4%, mm-hmm. now it's 15%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sales tax was 2%, now it's 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, let's reduce taxes on the poor and the middle class, mm-hmm. raise them on the wealthy individuals and corporations.
Mm-hmm.
This way you can eliminate the budget deficit.
Right.
Plus, with the consumers and the middle class and the poor are the real consumers.
Yeah.
And jobs are created
mm-hmm.
through the cooperative action of producers and consumers. Producers can only hire people, but they have to sell their goods.
And for which consumers?
Right? For which you need consumers.
Very good. Yeah, exactly.
If you cannot sell your goods, then you lay off the people.
Right.
So jobs are created through the cooperative action of producers and consumers, and that's why we have to have healthy consumers, which we don't.
And Dr. Batra, this is exactly opposite of what today IMF, World Bank, even Paul Ryan, he has come up with the plan where he's, again, he's taxing the social security, he's cutting the benefits for the poor, and he's trying to give tax cuts to the rich. You know, there's something really exactly opposite of what you are saying is happening today. And I guess Americans should realize this, you know, that what Paul Ryan is trying to do is something really, another voodoo economics. Like
it's another snake oil potion that Reagan fed everybody.
Right.
It's after Reagan that we began to have such huge problems. And you have huge deficits. Consumers are in debt. Government is in debt. Growth is coming down.
Right.
Unemployment is incredibly high.
Right.
So haven't we learned enough from this kind of economics?
Precisely.
And we want more of this.
Right.
This is terrible.
So also in your book, you talk about a system, economic system called Prout. And you tell that it is more of an economic democracy with economic decentralization. And primarily you say, no, it is not socialism. It's mass capitalism. Can you tell us more about Prout? What is Prout? You know, how Prout can help establish a very good prosperity for whole America and maybe later for the whole world?
Well, see, again, Prout is a new economic theory, and it preaches economic democracy. And why do we need economic democracy? The main thing is that we should have a free market system, a system in which the role of the government is small, the government size is also small. We should have a system in which demand rises automatically as productivity goes up.
Mm-hmm.
That is, so that demand rises to the level of supply as productivity goes up. Now, it can happen only in economic democracy.
Mm-hmm.
When the CEO of the company is responsible, in economic democracy, the majority shares of a large company are owned by employees themselves. And as employees, the CEO is responsible to the employees. So whenever productivity goes up, the CEO will have to raise employee wages. Automatically.
Yes, very good. Yeah.
So demand will automatically rise to the level of supply.
Right.
You don't need government deficit. You don't need consumer deficit
mm-hmm.
to raise demand to the level. So this is, and I call it mass capitalism because majority shares of large companies will be owned by employees and they are masses.
Exactly.
So it's mass capitalism,
uh-huh.
mass ownership of property. And this system would work.
Very much. And so could you advise young people like me, how do we bring about this golden age that you're talking about? And how do we hasten this? What can we do as young people, you know, who want to see prosperity, who do not want to see people laid off, who want to eliminate corruption and poverty? In this?
Well, they'll have to become politically active. They have to, anybody who collects a lot of campaign money,
mm-hmm.
don't ever vote for him.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
I mean, nowadays, there are politicians who brag, I collected 10 million, I collected 15 million.
Right.
and they brag. Now, anybody who brags like this, don't vote for him. He would stop bragging.
Oh, very good.
And also he would stop taking money from these corporations. Uh-huh. Once these politicians are not beholden to corporations, then wages would rise. They would adopt policies that would automatically raise wages with productivity. And that's what the youth can do, become politically active.
And you also refer to a website called toutistuniversal.org, where people can go. We have blogs on it, how we can do some things.
There are several.
It's www.proutistuniversal.org.
Actually, tell them this, not the whole thing. They should go to Google, type in the word Prout, and that will take them to various...
Prout, P-R-O-U-T.
Prout. Yeah, that's okay. Right, P-R-O-U-T.
All right, Dr. Batra, once again, I would like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And I hope this interview should have been very informative to our listeners. And I'm sure there should be many questions to listeners for Dr. Batra. And Dr. Batra, we would also appreciate if you could come to our radio station sometime in future, and when you could answer the questions from our listeners and how to ensure their financial health for our community. And also how what steps we could do now so that we are not going towards anything bad, but we're getting to a very good golden age, and our listeners were sure very interested in asking those questions.
Thanks a lot, but I think the most important thing that comes out for the listener is this, that if they see that the budget deficit is coming down, then a stock market crash is coming. So be warned.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mitra.